What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Dropping Dimes, the show where we talk about all things basketball. I'm your host, Rodrigo, but you can call me Rod, and we're now live on YouTube. Hell yeah! Joining me are these fantastic gentlemen. Please welcome, as always, it's Mr. Table Double. Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm excited. Look at this new setup. Wow, it's so intimate here. We're right beside each other.
I know, right? We should just keep it that way. No, I'm kidding. Folks, please help me welcoming. He's the all-seeing predictable oracle. You also know him as Leo. Leo, how you doing?
I'm right here, and I'm feeling really good about it.
Make a mind.
Let's go.
And last but certainly not least, it is the true king of Kentucky, Blake. How you doing, man?
How's it going, fellas? I am great. So excited to be live this week as well, too, and looking forward to it.
We have quite a lot to talk about, guys, and we might as well just jump in because this past weekend, guys, I don't know if you saw that. There was a little game that happened on Saturday, right? It was the in-season tournament final. And guys, let me tell you something. The Lakers are your inaugural in-season tournament champions. You can say that. Like, please let me hear you saying, who won, guys? Who won? Who beat the Pacers? Let me hear you say it.
You already said it.
You already said Lakers, yeah.
I already heard it. It's too redundant.
No need to rub it in.
We get it. I mean, game didn't even count for the regular season. Who cares?
Oh, come on. Okay. All right. No. In all truth, I'm sure that everyone here watched that game. It was a very entertaining game. It was everything that sort of we had hoped for. I know I personally had a Lakers-Celtics final. I was drooling over that, but you know, all the credit also to Indiana, all the kudos goes to them because they were quite a scrappy team, and it wasn't until the fourth quarter that things got really decided. Anthony Davis had an absolutely monstrous game, and this is the AD that belongs.
He heard you.
That. Yep. I know, right? Like, he finally heard
all your prayers. Have been answered for one night only.
This is the type of games that actually put Anthony Davis in that, you know, top 75 players list. He was an absolute presence on both offense and defense. And now LeBron James had a quote unquote quiet night. Austin Reeves, everyone in the team did their job. I think one of the most impressive parts was the defense. This is a team whose sole identity should be anchored on defense because they only shot two threes throughout the game. And these days we know that, you know, shooting threes sort of helps winning games, but everyone, including Vanderbilt, including Cam Reddish, you know, they were tasked with, hey, you got to stop Tyrese Halliburton in any way, shape, or form. And they all did. All their rotations were absolutely on point. It was, as a Lakers fan, and honestly, I think as a regular fan of the game, it was a beauty of a game. And like I said, credit to the Pacers because they did not just stand there and let the Lakers beat them. They were fighting. There was a point during the third quarter where, you know, they had a crazy 90-second rally, and they got up to or down to three. But the Lakers also, credit to them, you know, they knew they were the experienced team. They were calm, collected. Every time the Pacers tried to reach the Lakers lead, the Lakers kept their cool. They stuck to their system, gave the ball to AD, and good things happened. But anyways, this is not a Lakers podcast, right? Not yet, at least.
Might as well be.
But I just want to hear very quickly from you guys, you know, what you thought of the game and your reactions to now the first championship of the in-season tournament.
I think you kind of nailed it with like, that's what we expect from AD. I know you've been begging him all year for that type of game, but you know, the Lakers experience, playoff experience was really on display, and the Pacers lack thereof playoff experience was on display. Few things coming into the game, you could tell that, you know, the Lakers really cut their chops right now on defense. And so that was a big point of you know, emphasis for them was trapping Halliburton early, closer to the nail, getting the ball out of his hands, not letting him create as much as he wants to. Now, the Pacers did have opportunities to win this game. You know, most notably, they were 10 of 41 from the three-point line. So you make a couple extra of those, and you, it's a bit of a closer game. But that's also the risk that you take and the price you pay when you build your team around such a three-point heavy offense. You know, the three ball wasn't dropping for them against the Bucks, but they were still able to pull out that win because the Bucks' transition defense isn't as strong, whereas the Lakers' transition defense, one of the best in the league, and you really saw that in that game. You know, Pacers weren't able to get out and run. Lakers are back heavy. And then on offense, Lakers were just piling into the paint like a battering ram. It was like, oh, it was like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. That
beautiful.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen the show Vikings. One of the best shows on TV ever. If you've never seen that show, I highly suggest watching it. But, you know, there's a couple of scenes where the Vikings are raiding the cathedral in France. In Paris, and they got this big battering ram. They're just battering down the gates, and that was what I felt like the Lakers' game plan was coming into this game, because they just took AD, they put him vertical or horizontal, and they just nosedived him straight into the lane over and over and over again.
Going hard in the
paint. To the point where, and it was you know, there's no answer because the perimeter defense of the Pacers is so lacking. They really rely so heavily on Miles Turner. And then we saw him get into foul trouble and ultimately foul out of the game. So, you know, a lot to be said about the game and the way that it was played. I thought the Pacers played a good game for how little playoff experience that they have. But, you know, this is exactly what we wanted for the IST. We wanted a playoff atmosphere. We wanted a big game that everyone's excited about. We wanted a, you know, big stat lines and people popping champagne in December. It was wicked. It was a ton of fun. And I'm excited for next year's.
I agree. I mean, what better way to cap off an in-season tournament than just like the way it kind of accumulated here too, just having this matchup, you know, two teams that were undefeated throughout the in-season tournament kind of coming into that, you know, matchup there at the end to see who's going to come out. And I think for the NBA, with the Lakers being on top, I mean, you know, when you think about the publicity behind that as well, too, the following, you know, that is going to help out a bit as well, too, from that perspective. But I mean, this is, you know, obviously Halliburton's coming out party. I mean, what an amazing performance he's had this whole entire season, but especially the end season tournament as well, too. I mean, obviously we're talking about the Lakers, but I mean, Indy's on the map. I mean, this is a team that, you know, just with a player like him, I mean, that I feel like free agents would want to come to kind of come to play alongside him and just the future that they have as well, too. But yeah, I think, you know, the Lakers, again, didn't shoot many three-pointers. I mean, I think they didn't even have a three-point attempt in the entire first half. Rod, you know this probably better than any of us. The Lakers are not a good three-point shooting team. They're one of the worst in the NBA this season. They are horrible. But I think they know that. And I think game planning-wise, as Tay was talking about, they really try to take advantage of, you know, in the paint. I mean, looking at the, kind of the box score, they dominated inside. I mean, 86 to 44, they had the edge in points in the paint. I mean, that's double what the Pacers had as well, too. And I think just the length and kind of the size that the Lakers have really kind of helped contain the Pacers, especially Halliburton on the perimeter. Again, there was a kind of a nice, you might see a little comeback there at the end as well, too. But the ageless LeBron and obviously AD, who I will continue to always stand behind. I love AD. But had a heck of a game as well, too. So, no, it was fun. I think this is a good step forward when we think about the future for the IST.
I think Blake said it there, 86 points in the paint. I think we got to sit on that a little bit. 86 points in the paint. That is
unbelievable. It was absolutely ridiculous. There was nothing the Pacers could do to stop, you know, either LeBron or AD.
They're just too small.
Exactly. I mean, the Lakers were just too strong. D'Angelo Russell had a chip on his shoulder against Bruce Brown. That was not the beef that I was expecting to come out of that game, to be honest with you guys. But Leo, you and I watched the game together. Shout out to Courtside.
Shout out to Courtside for sure.
Shout out to you for putting up with us Lakers fans out there yelling at everyone.
It was really nice to see your hands clamor for a little bit in the fourth there when they were coming back for a little bit. But, you know, we've already talked about how great this game was and how going forward it's going to be really great for the NBA. You guys have touched on most of the things that I've already thought of, but really my biggest thing coming out of it now is, you know, with all this excitement and, you know, this team feeling like they really want a chip, where is their energy going to be going back into the season now, right? Because we're still really, really early in the season. And, you know, people are popping champagne in December, and it was great to see. You know, we never get that. But like, my worry is now that the Lakers are going to take it off a little bit and, you know, maybe like not play as hard coming down the pipe, and we'll see what happens, right?
Allow me to calm your nerves, Leo. There is nothing to worry about. The Lakers know this is not the big one. They know perfectly well that this is not, the job's not done. Job's not finished, like Kobe would say. So this was a nice win. Like LeBron said, you know, they made history. Lakers are the first in-season tournament champions. You can never take that away from me or from them, mostly from them. But they know that.
Congratulations, Rod. You worked really hard for this. Yeah. So I'm really proud of you.
I think that was your pick last week too, right?
Like I said, I've purchased enough stuff to be a minority owner. Anyways, that's for another day.
I do want to say, just to supplement the 86 points in the paint, also out-rebounded the Pacers 55-32. So just an all-round dominant performance inside. Yeah. And then, you know, the lack of shooting and successful shooting from the Pacers on the outside, that was the difference of the game.
The length of the Lakers really disrupted that, right? And then also just
honestly showed
the lack of size.
Objectively, for the Pacers, I think the Lakers should rewatch this game and say, this is who we are as a team. That game is a prime example of who this Lakers team should be night in and out. And if we want to aspire as contenders, that's how we should play, you know, granted, not every game, but, you know, that's what they should be striving for, period. There's no other, any other system that will work better for the Lakers or for this Lakers team. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, like they have to live up to that, like you said, that same caliber play night in, night out, right? I mean, the Lakers, like you feel, especially with LeBron and the team they have, like come big game times, he always shows up. And like, you feel like there's a different tenacity behind it as well, too, when you have something of this caliber. But yeah, is it when you're playing, you know, the Pistons, you know, the Spurs, are you going to continue to have this kind of competitiveness each night in, night out?
Yeah. Something I want to mention too is, you know, the Pacers coming into this game and still currently have the best offensive rating in the league, but not only the league, the entire NBA history so far. You know, they're a full 2 points ahead of the next closest team, which I believe was the Alex English led Denver Nuggets. So, you know, it just speaks to the Lakers' defensive presence. I think it's the inside, the outside. As Leo was saying, the big athletes, 6'8" athletes, making use of Cam Reddish on both ends of the floor. It was something to look at. And you know what? Like when we're this early in the season and we're talking about what the playoffs could potentially look like, and there's so much uncertainty in the league right now with all sorts of teams all over the place and both sides of the conferences. I think it's just I think it's exciting, and it gives Lakers fans a lot to be excited about, and it gives. It gives at least one game tape that you could just play on repeat for Anthony Davis every single day. When he wakes up in the morning before he goes to bed, this is how you should play. This is how you should play every game. Don't ever play worse than this again. 40-20 every game, please.
you said it, Tate.
Take one more dribble. Just one more. Go into the show.
We'll make that Anthony Davis' alarm clock. That recording. All right, fellas, I can't believe I'm gonna say this, but sadly we have to move on from the Lakers. I don't know about you, but that makes me sad. All right, I think we have a news section here, and Blake, this is all you, so take it away.
So for those that know me, I love hypotheticals. I love to kind of put an executive or a GM hat on. So I'm envisioning my best Pat Riley here. And we like to think, if you were to today, as of right now, this current moment, to build a franchise around a certain NBA player, who is it going to be? Who would be the top five players that you would like to build your franchise around? Now, again, we're looking at players current days. So we're not thinking past players. We're not thinking players in their prime, but at the current moment as well, too. And this is something that's come up a lot of it as well, too. And when I think about myself in that Pat Riley role, trying to bring a franchise championship here to the Miami Heat as well, too. At number five, I have Anthony Edwards. So Anthony Edwards, the Ant-Man, is my number five. 22 years of age, obviously. We've talked about him quite a bit in the past few weeks as well, too. Just his future potential, where he's at right now, really making that next step. So I have him at number five. Number four, someone who we just talked about, Tyrese Halliburton is on my top five players to build around. I mean, again, how much more, I mean, can we talk about this player? He's been incredible, obviously leading the NBA in assists right now too. I mean, when you look at his assist to turnover ratio, it's just been mind-boggling, the productivity that he has around that as well too. And someone that definitely has a very bright future, only 23 years of age as well too. Number three, player from up north, Canada, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA, of course, is my number three player to build a franchise around as of today as well, too. One of our favorite MVP candidates, as we've talked about. I mean, averaging 30 points per game this year, really. I mean, it's hard to even stop Shai. I mean, it's just so incredible when you see his production. But most importantly, how well it is as well, too, field goal percentage-wise. I mean, this is a guy that, from the free throw line, obviously 2 points, doesn't shoot a ton of threes, but again, is just an incredible player. Number two, and this is somewhat of a big if of what the potential is for this player, but it does seem massive, and that is none other than Victor Wembanyama. Wimby is my number two, 19 years of age, obviously a freak athlete, a freak of nature himself as well, too. Just the potential out of the roof. I have him at number two. It was hard to not have him at number one personally, just because I want to see what the season looks like as well, too, and how it kind of continues on within that. But number one, none other than Rod's son, Luka Doncic, is my number one. So I have Luka at number one, 24 years of age, an incredible player, arguably the best player in the NBA, some might say as well, too. Someone who I definitely would like to build my franchise around.
It's a good list. I got to admit, I've got the exact same list.
Whoa. I don't know how much variety or, you know, how many deviations we'll have from that list, to be honest. Maybe in the rankings, but Blake, that was solid.
Very solid. Yeah, I think you really nailed it, at least with the young talent that's in the league. It was kind of hard to choose a top five, but at the same time, not super hard, right? Like, this top five that you listed off, more or less, like there's a couple other names that you could toss in there for you know, just for argument's sake, but I think this would be a really good time to revisit a conversation that we had last season, the old Halliburton versus Jaylen Brown conversation. Are we still thinking that Jaylen Brown is a better player than Tyrese Halliburton, or has my man done enough to prove himself these days?
I fold. You're right, and you had the eye for it, and he is that guy. You know, his playmaking ability makes him just exceptional, right? Like, there is nothing that any of these other young guards can really do that Tyrese Halliburton can't do. He's got the speed, he's got the shot, he can do it all. The only guy, I think we all have kind of the same players here, but the only guy I might bump off myself personally is Anthony Edwards for Nikola Jokic, because I think Jokic's game is just going to be dominant for the next 10 years, right? Like, he's a bit older, but he's not really on like the other side of 30 yet. And he is still improving, I feel. So nobody's really figured him out yet. I would start a franchise with Nikola Jokic still. So, yeah.
I mean, it's so hard to like say no, I wouldn't start a franchise with Nikola Jokic. Yeah. Obviously, I would love to have Nikola Jokic on the Portland Trailblazers. But, you know, 28, 29, I think my big reservation with him is this man going to want to play basketball for very many years? Is he really like every time I see that guy, he's talking about horses, watching horses on his iPhone and talking to his teammates about horses. I don't even know if this guy likes basketball anymore. Like, I wonder how many more years he's gonna bless us with that we get to watch, because he is a treat to watch. And that's best player in the world right now. You'd be foolish not to start your franchise with him.
Yeah, I have to say, one player that was really hard for me to kind of leave off the list a bit, and I'm sure we may get into it a bit later, but Ja Morant. I mean, it's someone that obviously hasn't played the entire season, obviously with the circumstances there as well, too. But yeah, is that someone, you know, to maybe be in that list as well, too? But I kind of went back and forth with him.
Yeah, that was a tough leave off for me. I ultimately went with Ant Edwards over Ja Morant, and I think that was, if we're looking at talking or starting a franchise, it's more than just what you bring on the floor. It's also what you bring off the floor, and the people that you went through, right? The SGA, Luka, Wemby, Ant, Halliburton. These are all leaders. Especially when you think about say like SGA, for example, and the culture that he's instilled there in OKC with Mark Dagno, and Edwards, just with the on-court presence that he brings. But Ja has had such so many off-court issues, and there was clips of him today that were getting leaked of him showing how to check a ball in court. I don't know what that was about, but it's, you can't bring up Ja, especially still in the midst of his suspension, without mentioning his off-court issues and what that would mean to a fresh franchise or building a franchise around someone that you may or may not expect to be on the floor at all times.
So I, if you guys don't mind, not a surprise here, but in from 5 to number 1, again, not a surprise, but I will start with Chet Holmgren, then Wembanyama. I put them both at the bottom of my list because I just haven't seen enough. I know they are freak athletes, but I want to see, you know, I wouldn't give them the keys to the car. I would buy the car, but I'm still driving here. Up next, it is the man of the hour for the young guys. It is Tyrese Haliburton. I have a guard bias, so I would trust him completely. And to build around him, he's someone that I don't think needs the ball all the time. So I think he will be a great facilitator to pair up with other superstars. Number two, it is the Prime Minister of Buckets, SGA. And the only reason why I did not put him at number one, it is because, Blake, you said it is my son, the one and only Luka Doncic. I mean, if you're not picking Luka, I honestly don't blame you, Leo. I understand the rationale behind Jokic. But Jokic tomorrow, like Tay said, you know, he's going to wake up and be like, you know what? I want to drink another 2 liters of Coke again, and I want to see my horsies, and peace out, NBA. Like, this is my job, and I'm showing you my – presenting my resignation as of today. But Luka, he's been playing basketball since he was born, basically. He doesn't know anything else. And I would love for him, in a hypothetical, if I was GM of the Lakers and I had the chance to get a Luka's, like, yeah, trade everyone, trade off our picks until the year 3200. I don't care. We're getting Luka.
Yeah.
Oh, 1100 years worth of picks from Rod.
It's worth it. Absolutely worth it.
It's tough to disagree. Like, the only real deviation I have from you guys is I had the Prime Minister number one, maybe a little bit of Canadian bias for me, but if I'm going to rationalize that, I think he's a two-way superstar, and I think he's the best two-way superstar in the league right now. I think he's overtaken Kawhi at that spot in terms of availability, but also in terms of performance. You know, he can command the floor, he can distribute, he can shoot, he can score at all three levels. But he's also a defensive monster. You know, he's averaging over a steal a game. He gets close to a block a game as well. I just think he's all round who I would want on the floor if I'm starting a team. And you know what? If I'm starting a franchise and I'm choosing, it's probably going to be a franchise in Vancouver. So what better to have than a Canadian superstar backing up my new Canadian team?
Oh, man. Can you imagine?
That'd be insane. Oh, imagine
that. Like, I dream about it every night.
So. Incredible.
If we ever had that chance to have, yet alone a team in Vancouver, but to have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in his present shape, I would buy season tickets. Like, you know, my credit card would melt from how fast I pull it out of my wallet.
And I think it's also worth noting, in your top five, Rod, you've got two Thunder, which is pretty promising for that young team over there. I think you know, everyone who listens to the podcast knows I'm a huge Chet fan, but I ultimately left him off because I'm not sure if he is a number one or franchise cornerstone type of option like these other guys are. Yeah, but I certainly commend you for the pick because I love me some Chet. I got to dig him up right now.
Yeah, probably leading rookie of the year race at the current moment, maybe.
That is probably true. They're currently throttling the Jazz by 20 in the first half. So
I'm surprised that none of you guys, I mean, I had this person as my sixth pick, but none of you guys really mentioned young Paolo Mancaro here. You know, he's
tremendous player, but you know, am I gonna build around him? I don't know yet. He's great.
The Magic are looking really good right now.
But the Magic is mostly a committee thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I would build around him, but am I going to build around him more than I would build around SGA or a Luka or a Wemby or an Ant Edwards or a Haliburton? Probably not. But tremendous young talent. I think he's really making a name for himself and the Magic this year with how well they performed. But yeah, it's hard to beat out the top five or the yeah. top six, top seven for whatever yeah. we've discussed right now.
Bankero's amazing as well, too. Someone definitely to think about for the future. From a young players, for ones we haven't mentioned, I would still probably take like a Jason Tatum over Paolo Banchero. 25 mm-hmm. years old, not too old as well, too. I'd honestly probably take De'Aaron Fox over Banchero as well, too. But I mean, really? I personally would. I think yeah. Fox is an incredible player. No slight but to any of these players by any means as well, too.
No, but, yes, slight. Yes, yes.
Well, I mean, Banchero's amazing.
Especially,
you know,
Tatum and Brown. Shout out to any Celtics fans out there.
Hey, Tatum, fantastic. But yeah, Banchero, definitely an interesting pick, Leo. Mm.
Shout out to all the Celtics fans watching. You didn't even make it to the in-season tournament finals. That's all I have to say.
I'm going back to that topic, eh? It's over, Rod.
Let's check the standings.
Okay. Yeah, don't follow me on social right now. It's all Lakers. Don't do that.
I'm not. Don't worry.
All right, boys. Well, anything else on, you know, top five? I have to say, I am surprised that I thought that one of us would mention Ja. And I almost put him on my list, but yeah, mm-hmm. I think you nailed it.
He was number six for me.
Off-court issues. It's just, if I'm in charge of the franchise, I do worry about his maturity right now. And like, would he be able to lead? And I don't know if he could at this moment. Mm. All right, boys. Well, we have some rapid fire. And Tay, I think you got it locked and loaded.
I do have it locked and loaded. I appreciate the buildup there. I figured it would be a good idea to have a little bit of a league rapid fire with all the stuff that's been going on around the league right now. It's kind of too much to talk about one by one. So I'm going to throw some stuff out. You guys give me back what you got. But let's start with the Nuggets. And Leo, I want to ask you specifically, your Nuggies here. Mm-hmm. In a bit of a mini slump right now. They've dropped three straight. And they're currently in a head-to-head battle against the Atlanta Hawks. Let me just do a quick score check here while we're live. They are up 11, so looking like they might be turning that around. But Jokic just shot a little poorly in the last two games. Again, he's turning it around tonight. But 9 of 32 and 9 of 26 in his last two games, something we haven't seen from Jokic in probably three or four seasons now, as well as Aaron Gordon shooting single digits or scoring in double single digits in the last couple of games. Cause for concern here. I know they're kind of middling in the Western Conference right now. Is this mini slump from either the Nuggets or Jokic any cause for concern?
I don't really think so, if I'm going to be honest. You know, it's a team coming off of a championship, and I think they recognize that they don't need to be a number one or a two seed or even a three seed to win it all. I think they may be conserving themselves a little bit. I will say the bench play promoting the younger guys up has been a bit of an adjustment. Jamal Murray has been out for a little bit, so I'm not really concerned about all that. We're missing Bruce Brown a little bit. We're missing Jeff Green's veteran presence there a little bit. But yeah, they're still fine, I think. You know, Jokic's little shooting slump is really out of the ordinary, but we're talking about a man that's been so efficient for the last three seasons. Is two games really going to change anything? So that's my little take on it.
Might be worth looking up to see what kind of horse races are going on in Serbia right now, because he could be otherwise preoccupied, and that's why he might not be shooting super well. Maybe his horses aren't performing very, you know.
I just want to say that, you know, I, for the most part, I agree, Leo, but if I'm a Nuggets fan, which I'm not, like other people that switch teams, they're like, oh, I'm a Raptors fan. No, I'm a Nuggets fan.
Wow.
I'm not like that. Oh, yeah, I'm on it today, guys. Don't worry. I'm not ringing all the bells, but you know, it's just like, hey guys, I know we're getting to the holidays break, but let's just tighten it up. If they win today, you know, then yeah, okay, we're back to normal. But if this game turns out to be a tougher win than it should be, I'd be like, do we want to have a quick meeting, like, just, you know, everyone conference room 5 minutes, because this is when things start to get sloppy. And yes, you know, championship teams know that they don't have to be number one or two seeded. But if you're not number three, then I do think, you know, especially in the West, I think you should start to have that conversation.
Yeah, what winning the IST does to an MF, hey? Rod's just
yes, look at that.
I only demand excellence.
I will say a little bit of interesting timing here, bringing up this rapid fire, because the Nuggets are beating the Hawks right now. They're also in the midst of a 19-5 run in the last 5 minutes. So looks like they might snap that 3-game losing streak. And you know what? Ultimately, I agree with you, Leo. I'm not overly concerned. My concern still lays with the depth issues. I think that there's some things that need to be addressed, like you mentioned, losing Uncle Jeff there, losing Bruce Brown. There's some holes that need to be filled, and they're seeing if they can fill it with some of the rookies and their second-year players. And not sure if that's what you want to go into the playoffs with, but if we're talking just a slump, I'm not concerned. Jokic is Jokic, best player in the world. Let's move on to our next topic. I want to talk about the Bulls here, as they are in the midst of a 4-game win streak. Red hot Bulls. Most notably, it started the win streak off with a overtime win against the Bucks. Now, a nice point to note here is all four of these games have been without LaVine. LaVine went out 4 games ago. And he was originally set to miss just a couple of games. He got reevaluated and has now been relisted to miss the next 3 to 4 weeks, which notably puts us past the December 15th date in which all players that have signed contracts become tradable. If you'll remember, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Zach LaVine requesting a trade. And now in the midst of this win streak, Coby White has caught fire with averages of 24 points, 6.5 rebounds, 6 assists, only 1.5 turnovers per game in those four games. So let me ask you, Blake, have we seen the last of LaVine in a Chicago Bulls jersey?
I think we have, I think the writing's a bit on the wall. Like you mentioned, Tay, he did request a trade earlier in the season as well too. And, you know, since he's been out, you know, he's been out 4 games now. And like you said, the Bulls have been on fire. I mean, they didn't have a single 3-game win streak when Zach LaVine was playing for the team as well too. And they've really been clicking since he's been out. They matched whenever they played. They recently had wins over the Milwaukee Bucks, over the Pelicans as well too. They matched season high with 32 assists in those games. And it's been kind of well spread out. DeRozan's been having great games. Obviously, you mentioned Coby White has just been playing incredible. I was actually just checking right now. They're playing the Bucks. They are down right now by 9 at halftime against the Milwaukee Bucks. But Coby White, 19 points already at halftime. I mean, he's playing incredible basketball as well, too. And again, Zach LaVine, you know, I think it was last Thursday they mentioned that he could potentially be out an additional 3 to 4 weeks with right foot inflammation. So that kind of maybe puts him potentially into mid-January. So if the Bulls are still clicking like this, I think he is out of there.
Yeah, I think Coby White, 19 points at half. Like he's having a hell of a run right now. And it's not doesn't really look like a fluke. I've watched the last couple Bulls games because I picked up Coby White in my fantasy league. Shout out fantasy. but he's got a good command of the floor. Like he's making good decisions. He's letting the game flow. He's not forcing anything like he was in his first 2 seasons. So it looks like it might be time for him to take that jump and start commanding the point guard duties. It'd be interesting to see what happens with LaVine, because it seems like it's just a matter of time before he's moved on. And it seems like they've mutually decided that, okay, this is no longer working. We're going to move on from this. You have to wonder where his value's at and what teams value him.
You know, like where is his stock at right now? You know, a team that's playing better without him and they're at the bottom of the barrel. I don't know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think it is low. I mean, I think Woj came out last week and said, really, right now at the moment, there's no market for Zach LaVine. So, and I don't think, you know, it's really helped his cause too much either.
Yeah.
Well, let's move it along, boys. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you still wondering?
I was just about to say, like, feels like a Tyrese Maxey moment here where the superstar is about to get traded. Mm-hmm. Coby White's playing really nice. And then maybe they gel better because of it.
Yeah, you know? It's not a bad take. It's been fun to watch Coby White perform. He has been kind of like hidden behind, he was behind Lonzo and he was behind LaVine. And it looks like he's got a good handle on it. And the Bulls realistically need to pivot to a young rebuild, build around your young pieces, get rid of these vets, you know, just tank. And let's see if we can turn any of these players into nice cornerstones and see if we can land something nice in the draft, because it's getting a little bit rough watching the Bulls just try and tread water year after year. Mm-hmm. Let's move along. Our next rapid fire topic, we do call it rapid fire, so we got to move along quick. The Pistons and to a slightly lesser extent, the Spurs, losing streaks, very bad. Pistons are in the midst of a 19-game losing streak. And, you know, I was really, really – I was watching the first half of the Pistons, Pistons-Pacers game, and I was really – they're playing them well, and I was hoping that, you know, I was going to get to this, and I was going to say, you know what, never mind. They're beating the Pacers. The losing streak is over. But, no, they are down 15 points with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So it looks like we are moving to a 20-game losing streak for the Pistons, followed up with a 16-game losing streak for the Spurs. Let me just drop in here. The NBA record is 26 games. Now that means the pace, the Pistons need to win at least one game in their next six games. But let me put out their next six games for you here. They got back-to-back games against the Sixers, a game against the Bucks. They got the Hawks. They got probably the most winnable game against the Jazz, and then two more games against the Nets. Rod, will we witness a historically bad streak by either the Pistons or the Spurs this season?
I'm going to take a shot here. And, oh, it went crystal and then in. So that means it's a bank. So bank on that statement, Tay. Yes, we'll have a new reigning loser in the NBA, and that is the Detroit Pistons. Oh. And is anyone surprised here, really? I mean, this is a franchise that they don't even know what's going on in there. You know, they drafted Jaden Ivey, and the guy isn't even playing. It was supposed to be the Cade Cunningham show, and then what? You know, there's nothing going on and working out for the Detroit Pistons. They seriously need to take a look at themselves in the mirror and just figure out what is going on. What is the direction of this franchise? They're just trying to give their young talent some, you know, a whole lot of minutes and expect for them to get experience and then get better. I don't know. With the Spurs, I'm not too concerned, and you know, I share that. I think Tay, you and I share that view, because right now it's all about Wemby, right? Get Wemby to, you know, get reps in the NBA environment, to get Wemby to get acclimatized, to get him to face NBA competition. The Spurs were not going to go into contention. They want to get, and I think they've been pretty honest about it, they want to get even better. They want to get another pick, and it shouldn't be a surprise, you know, that they're losing. But, you know, beware of the Spurs. You know, they, with Wemby, and then if you add another key rookie next year, I think they're in the making of that process of, you know, a young OKC, where at one point it was like, okay, what's going on? They have all these young pieces, but, you know, they're very talented. And now it hasn't taken that long to see all these young players blossoming into an exciting and very watchable team. So I think that's the trajectory the Spurs are taking. And obviously you got one of the greatest, if not the greatest coach of all time in Greg Popovich, who I'm sure has a plan. The front office for the Spurs has always been sort of very patient. This is not a flashy franchise. You cannot expect them to then, you know, make any splashy signings during the summer. But, you know, give them another 3 years. I think we'll be talking about the Spurs in the same way that we're talking about the Thunder right now. The Pistons, honestly, I'll go grab some water because I don't want to waste any more saliva on them. If you're a Pistons fan, I am so sorry. I'm sending you all my love and prayers. And I hope for your recovery very, very soon. Like, that's all I have to say.
Why do you guys think they're so bad, though? Because they do
have... they are. They're about to lose 20 in a row.
I know. They're pretty rough. It's really weird to me because they have really nice pieces. It's not like they don't have size or speed or, you know, assist. Like, it's just
none of these guys are bad. They are NBA players, right? They made it because they earned their place in the NBA, right? So I don't think it's the players. It's the franchise itself. Like, they don't know what they want to do, right? Most of the franchises, you know, they sort of land in a position even. I'm looking at you, Raptors, right now, because you seem to start to fall into that, like, you know, where are we right now? But that's when your front office is supposed to make the call and say, like, you know what? We're getting rid of our assets and we're going to go young and we're going to build up, right? But the Pistons, they have done nothing. You know, what is their greatest highlight in the past 10 years, in the past 5 years, is Blake Griffin. That's their highlight. You know, post-Clippers, Blake Griffin taking them to the playoffs. That's it.
So, Jeremy Grant erasure right now.
Wiping him out.
Yeah. I will say... I think my biggest concern with the Pistons is that they went into the season truly trying to perform better. They gave Monty Williams the biggest contract that a coach has ever gotten in the NBA. If I remember correctly, I think it was 6 years, $80 million or just shy of $80 million. You know, If I want to speak to their on-court issues, they have no shooting. I think their best shooter, well, they got Bogdanovich back now, but their best shooter before they got Bogdanovich back two or three games ago was Beef Stew, Isaiah Stewart, in the starting lineup. So it's a lot of players that like to play inside. It's a lot of athleticism. There's not a lot of cohesion. There's not a lot of action going on in terms of, hey, you know, let's actually get into some action. Let's run like a pin down screen and fire someone off of it. It's just like your turn, my turn. Let's drive and kick out and let's see if we can get anything. But people are giving them threes and no one's hitting them because nobody can. And, you know, I'd be really concerned. It's nobody likes to, you know, regardless of where you're at in a tanking structure, nobody wants to lose 20 games in a row. That's not great for your mental health. That's not great for your development. That's not great for your confidence. So you have to wonder what's going to happen here. They're certainly not going to fire the coach. And I don't think it's Monty Williams' fault, but something's got to change. You know, you're staring down the barrel of an all-time bad losing streak. And that is not the type of award
they're unforgivable, honestly, for a professional basketball team. Like basically 20 games lost, it's, you know, where do you start, right? It's not the players anymore at that
Blake point. I have to ask you how you're feeling with your Cade most improved pick coming into the season.
I am regretting that pick. I will say that you know, it was one he started off kind of well, but yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle. I mean, it's not been bad, it's just, yeah, not to the level I was hoping for. I think many people as well too, but yeah, it's been a bit rough to watch the Pistons. I don't think their lineups that they're putting out are, I mean, they're playing two big men like quite often as well too. James Wiseman, just, I mean, I feel like he's a name many people have forgotten about. I mean, so much hype and potential, and just kind of really not been what many hoped as well too. But yeah, it's been a bit rough.
Well, I'm sorry, Pistons fans. I sincerely hope it gets better at some point soon, because you do have some pieces on that team that are fun to watch. But I mean, if you're a fan of that team and you've watched all 20 games, man, my condolences. Let's move it along. Our next one in the rapid fire is the Minnesota Timberwolves in the midst of a 6-game win streak, and a little bit further back, 9-1 in their last 10 games. Now, 3 out of their last 4 games, they haven't had Ant Edwards. I got Ant Simons. I got Trailblazers on the brain. But they have been without Ant Edwards for 3 of the last 4 games. He gave it a try in their last game against the Grizzlies. I think he played 4 minutes and sat down with that hip. They do have the 17th ranked offense, but they have the first ranked defense. And it's by a wide margin, nearly 3 points per game in their defensive rating. They're sitting with a record of 17-4. They're 3 games above the second ranked Thunder. Now, I got to ask. Is this sustainable?
This is the prime example of a regular season team. The Timberwolves are a great team to watch. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but Rudy Gobert is looking like the defensive player of the year.
Yes. Yes. That's
a win.
A man recognizes when he's been wrong. But having said that, I think this is a great example of, you know, it reminds me of the Utah Jazz with Donovan Mitchell and Gobert. It reminds me of, you know, the Denver Nuggets before they figured it out, where, you know, they were gunning for that number one spot and they use all that energy, all of that focus and remaining the top team on the West, which is really hard. And then come playoffs time, that's when the other teams, you know, reach that new level that this young Timberwolves team, I don't think, has yet. And I'm sorry to say this, but I see an early exit of the playoffs just out of lack of experience in the postseason. But it'll be a team to be reckoned in the future for sure.
I don't know, man. My Nuggies said they were the hardest team to play last year, and that was before Man went off, you know. And now he is the guy. You know, we just talked about all of us wanting to start a franchise with that man for really specific reason, right? He has that it factor. He can turn it up. And I think he relishes like the big moments. They're finally clicking. Mike Conley is the perfect floor general for this team, keeping all the heads cool. And then Cat also really wanting to play big, but like deferring to where he's supposed to be in this offense. They're clicking, and it's for a good reason. I think it's sustainable. I'd be scared of them.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with Leo. I think that this is a team that can really make a run. I mean, I don't think they're going to win the West, but I mean, I think that they are a threat. I mean, they're playing extremely well right now as well, too. You kind of started seeing them clicking towards the end of last season, kind of going into the playoffs. Again, Ant, what a clutch performer himself as well, too. And I think, you know, you finally see some cohesiveness between Kat and Rudy kind of on the floor together, you know, in a sense of just a bit awkward, you know, when they first kind of came into that as well. Rod, as you mentioned it, one of my favorite defenders, Rudy Gobert, is having an incredible season as well, too. I mean, I have high hopes for this team. I think they can actually make a pretty good run.
Yeah, like I do have to preface, the six-game win streak isn't against the most impressive teams, right? Like, but they have pulled out some nice wins. They beat the Sixers, they beat the Knicks, they beat the Warriors in back-to-back games. They beat the Celtics, they beat the Nuggets. So they have some wins that you can look at this schedule here and say, you know, you can't really say that they've kind of skated by and they've had an easy schedule or a soft schedule so far. And I know no one said that, but just to kind of get ahead of that argument there, they've had some impressive victories and, you know, they've won a couple of games down without Ant Edwards. I don't think it's necessarily sustainable that they stay atop the West, but you know, we're talking about a team that finished eighth last year and was firmly in the play-in. I see it that they could be out of the play-in and they could be firmly a playoff team and they could be focused on what their first round matchup is. And, you know, I'm not sure I totally disagree with Rod saying they'd be an early out, but I don't think it would be an easy team to beat. And depending on the matchup that they get, I could see that going six or seven games. And I have to be honest, like Ant Edwards looks like the player that he was billed as when he was drafted now. Like he's figured it out.
Yeah.
As we're talking about SGA being a two-way star, so is Ant Edwards. And you know, he's got the dog in him. As everyone says, he's got that dog. Like he just wants to go out there. He wants to kill someone, right? He's looking like he stole his bike. He's ready to come for you. So I don't think it's a team that you'd want to see in the playoffs. Now, you know, maybe they go against the Nuggets and it's an easy out for the Nuggets, but you know, they've got that interior presence that could give Jokic a little bit of trouble. And I think it's a team that not a lot of Western Conference teams would want to see in that first round.
They have a lot of length and their bench play is actually really solid, right? Like Naz Reid, that signing him when yeah. we saw that was really weird, but like now you're seeing it unfold.
It works.
Right? It makes sense.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense. And you know, your Lakers just won this in-season tournament based off of going in the paint, right? Like maybe that's the way we're going back to playing, right? Maybe that's
and having big, long, athletic defenders and having a really defensive-led team. If you want to talk about the Lakers winning the IST with a good defense, this is the best defense in the league currently. Yes. Probably with
for now.
probably with the defensive player, arguably. If we were to end the season now, he might be the defensive player of the year in Rudy Gobert. And I certainly think it's sustainable. You know, I don't think they're going to carry an 81% winning percentage through the entire season, but
I'm swerving. I'm swerving.
They're going to go further than the Lakers, Rod.
They are.
They are. Simple as that. They're going to go further than the Lakers.
I agree. I think the same as well, too, on that, too. I think they're built better for that.
I look forward to a first-round matchup, Wolves.
I'm keeping the receipts, guys. I'm keeping the receipts.
I am the Oracle, my man.
Oracle's busted.
All right, let's move it along. We got one last rapid fire topic that I want to hit on here before we wrap things up, and we kind of teased it earlier in the show today, and that is the Ja Morant return. We are 8 days away from the return of Ja Morant, which will be on December 19th, a game that is against the New Orleans Pelicans. Now the Grizzlies are currently 6-15. We talked about them a little bit in past episodes and where we think they might be able to go this year, but can Ja returning help them turn the page and enter that play-in, kind of being frisky, play-in, playoff-ish type team? I want to start with you, Blake.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a no-brainer, and I'm going to definitely argue with anybody that says that it's not going to turn it around as well, too. I mean, Ja Morant, I mean, this is – I mean, we talked about him, like you said, a bit earlier today. I mean, in some way that potentially might be in a top five player that you build a franchise around. I mean – obviously, you know, like you said, he's due back on December the 19th. I think technically, you know, it could change depending on if he meets the formalities that Adam Silver kind of put in place on that too. But all expectedly, we all expect him to be back then. I mean, this is a team, looking at the Memphis Grizzlies, that is second worst in the NBA when it comes to offensive points per game, just ahead of the Portland Trailblazers there, too. And Ja, you know, that's someone that can fill that gap right there, too. When you think about needing an offensive spark, I mean, you know, he's definitely one of the players you think about that comes front of mind. I mean, averaged 26 points per game last season as well, too. And especially if when he comes back, if they can keep some of the production, what I mean, like if Desmond Bane can keep up the career year that he is having right now, 25 points per game, if Jaren Jackson, if Ja coming back, if his, you know, caliber can rise a bit more. I mean, he's kind of having a bit of an off year defensively for what many people expect as well, too. You know, I don't think this is going to bring them to, you know, looking at a top five seed in the West, but I think he's going to put them in the playoffs throughout that as well, too. Now, I don't really think they're going to make a run, but I mean, this is a different caliber player that immediately coming back is going to make an impact on your team.
Yeah. My biggest thing with that, though, Blake, is that last year when he was out, or the year before that, the Grizzlies were playing really well without him, right? They had a system. They knew who to go to. And this year, they just look lost without him. And I don't know if they're going to have enough time to integrate him back into the fold and then make a push to the playoffs.
I'm with Lee on this one. Will Ja make a difference? Absolutely. He's a tremendous player. We all have him, you know, on the fringes of our top five young players, right? But it feels a little too late. I don't think that Ja by himself will be able to carry this team. They don't have Steven Adams. They no longer have Dylan Brooks, who turns out was a big part of that identity of who the Grizzlies were, that scrappy, cocky, swaggerific Grizzlies team. And this is sort of a new team that has yet to find an identity. Ja will make sure to, you know, show them a little bit of last year's, but I don't know if it'll be enough. You play in tournament standings, yeah, I can see that, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is a year that the Grizzlies sort of take a step back and try to rebuild internally and then come back stronger next season.
You know, I actually agree with Blake. I think that Ja's return means a lot for this team. We had the conversation 20, 30 minutes ago about whether or not he was a top five young player that you would want to build a franchise around. And it was a hard out for all of us and ultimately ended up being the off-court issues that kept him out. But if we talk about purely the on-court and what he's going to bring, 26 points, 8 assists, as Blake said, really, really been struggling on offense, and a lot of it has been heavily leaning on Jaren Jackson Jr. to create and score, and that is just not the player that he is, and that's what I believe ultimately led to him having a down year, and even a down year on the defensive end. His blocks are way down from where they've been the last couple seasons, and I think that just comes with expending so much energy on offense, just trying to get anything. His three-point percentage is down, his block percentage is down. We haven't really seen what Marcus Smart looks like on this team because he got injured so early and he's been out for a while. So I'm hopeful. I think that the play-in is a shoe-in for them, at least with how good they've been in the past. I think that's, you know, it's not lightning in a bottle. I think that they should be able to get there. They're certainly better than the Jazz. And really, they're just trying to beat a team like the Rockets or the Pelicans in here to get into that 9-10 spot. But it's hard to say, right? Like with how hard it's been, you know, and we were kind of talking about what it means to lose 20 games and what it does to your mental health. And just a quick update, the Pistons did in fact lose. So congratulations on the 20 game losing streak. But we got to think what it does losing that many games, to your mental health and to your team chemistry. And, you know, they're 5-16, or sorry, they're 6-15. I almost took a win away from them, but 26-28% losing percentage is not a great look, and it's not great for the team vibes, but you have to hope that Ja will inject them with some energy and some confidence going forward, and him being their team leader and their heart on offense. I think that they're poised for a good turnaround. We're only 25 games into the season. We've got another 2/3 left. I think that that's enough for them to find some of that cohesion and start to make a bit of a push.
I want to see it. You know, I do want to see it. But I think, like, Steven Adams was the guy in the locker room that made it possible, right? And Dylan Brooks, like Rod was saying, was another identity guy. And they seem a little lost this year without these guys just like kind of anchoring them down. Putting Jar back into like the fold here, like he is going to make an amazing impact, right? Like he's going to give you that scoring. He's going to move the ball around. He's going to get everybody going. But is it going to be enough?
I mean, I think it's hard. It's hard to say. It's hard to say that, like, you know, them losing.
I want to see it.
It's hard to say that them losing these pieces has been like such a big detractor for them when their main piece has been missing the entire time. We don't really know what this team is going to look like, and if Dylan Brooks has made that big of an impact that it's causing them to lose all of these games. And, you know, Steven Adams, of course, is such a good player and such a strong presence in terms of positive chemistry. But I mean, I'm sure he's still part of the team, and he's missed, you know, large parts of the last couple seasons as well with the same type of injury. So ultimately, like, I just think that so much of what this team does revolves around Ja, and with him gone, you know, okay, they were able to, you know, make up for him last season, win games when he was out, but those are spot games here and there, and people aren't game planning for that coming into the game, right? Teams are already expecting and know that he's not going to be there, and I just think that this kid's way too good for him not to make a giant impact. And I don't think that we're far enough into the season for us to confidently say that they're fully out.
Hmm. Yeah, I will say that he will be hungry coming back to show you know what it's about. And
I would hope so.
Playing really, really well. So they have that going for them.
I mean, we ultimately should see a career year from Ja after he comes back. He's had 25 games worth of rest, and he's going to have fresher legs than everyone else he's playing against. And he's, as you said, Leo, he's got something to prove.
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind, too, is during this 25-game suspension, he's been able to travel and practice with the team. I mean, he's been helping lead a lot of second, third-team units as well, too. So, I mean, he's still keeping that rhythm with the team and being involved within that as well, too, which I think is good for him and the team's chemistry as they move forward. And hopefully him for his just personal kind of growth and mentorship as well. Obviously, like you said, Tay, Steven Adams is still there, but now you have Marcus Smart in the locker room, obviously, on this team. You have a Derrick Rose, again, guys that similar position that hopefully can kind of help bring him along as well too from a personal development standpoint.
So Blake, where do you see them landing at the end of all of it? Are they like a playoff team?
I see them as kind of a play-in team. I think maybe around
at best.
I think probably around that 8 seed is where I think could be.
Eight.
I think they could.
That's too high.
We have a lot of basketball. There's been 20 games.
We're talking like Vancouver and New York grand prizes here, Blake. It's too high.
There's plenty of season left to go throughout this as well, too. I mean, this can happen.
To back up Blake a little bit here, they're only 5 games out of the 8th seed. There's a 3-way tie for the 8th seed. The Pelicans, the Clippers, and the Rockets. They're all 11-10 or in and around that winning percentage. They're only 5 wins behind that. And I don't think it's are the Rockets, is this Rockets, you know, 10-9? Is that sustainable for this Rockets team? The Pelicans, 12-11, are they going to stay healthy throughout the rest of the year?
I think so for both those teams.
I feel like we're discrediting also the Warriors. They're still going to hang around. You know, right now they're out of the picture, but they'll be there knocking the door as well. I agree. The Rockets might not be up there as the 8th seed, but, you know, the Pelicans, the Warriors, heck, even the Jazz might figure it out in the end. I don't think the Grizzlies will be, maybe playing, but 8, that's too high for me.
I think they could. I mean, usually defensively, they're not a bad team. And you think, I mean, Rod, defensively, statistically, they are equal par as the Los Angeles Lakers when you're looking at things right here.
We started off with the wrong foot today. That's on me. I get it.
They are just missing an amazing piece in John Morant. Think about the offensive boost that you would give them through that.
This was a personal attack. This was not basketball. This was just
statistically
personal
facts.
I'm not gonna retort that. Thank you. Thanks for your opinion, Blake.
Okay, we'll see at the end of the season where they end up. I'm on the fence.
We're only 25 games into the season by the time he comes back, right? Like, realistically,
I don't know, it feels like the season's over already because somebody won a fucking cup. Oh, my bad.
It's true. It's true. With the way Rock
first into this. Ever.
Oh, no.
This is how we're finishing.
Here comes the crown again.
We're finishing the episode like this, boys. I don't care.
It's Burger King.
I knew I should have shaved today. I knew I should have shaved. Tate, do you think the Grizzlies will make it to the play-in or to the playoffs?
I think that they'll make it back into the play-in. And they'll be okay. Punching. There's a lot of basketball left to be played. I think John Morant is way too good. I think that this Grizzlies team has performed way too well in the past. You know, they've lost some pieces, but ultimately I think they're not far enough out of the picture to completely disqualify them from turning it around for the next two thirds of the season.
All right, boys. Well, thanks for that rapid fire. That wasn't as rapid, but it was definitely fire. I'll give you guys that. So definitely looking forward to the next edition of Rapid Fire. Boys, I think we covered it all. And as always, for everyone watching or listening, make sure that you follow us on Spotify. Now, make sure you follow us on YouTube. You'll be able to see our pretty faces, our accessories. When we win the cup, I'll have a replica here again so I can show off to everyone. If you want to get a hold of us, just DM us on Instagram, @dropping.dimes, or you can send us an email, contact@dropping.dimes.com. This crown was a bad idea. I'm going to take it off. I cannot hear very well. And make sure that you check out our website, www.dropping-dimes.com. Anything else, boys?
Nada. Well, I think we covered it. We went through the whole league, it seems like.
Wraps our very first YouTube Live. Thank you all. Cool. Thank you to the folks that I knew we had a few viewers there. Were you going to catch this on Spotify? Until next week, this is your inaugural in-season tournament champion, along with the Dropping Dimes crew, signing off. Peace, love, basketball. Adios.
Peace. Cool. Huggy.